This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
A 1099-K is an information return sent out by payers like eBay and your banks. It's sent to merchants to report the gross transactions. This is what the IRS is going to know about your transactions. And then you just report what you need to do properly.
I have a vision for like a local co-op, like a WeWork. A WeWork meets eBay, where other local sellers can come together and we can work together but doing our own things during the day, like where we share mannequins and we share light boxes. And you get what I'm saying?
Oh, of
the
course.
WeWork,
yeah.
But not office cubicle, you know, for resellers.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration to start, run, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 163, and I am alone again, naturally. Rebecca is still out, as is Brian now. And, of course, I enjoy the entire podcast production experience. But let me be honest, I really, really, really miss having a co-host to share this desk. It's definitely less fun without them, and I look forward to their return, I hope, in our next episode. In the meantime, up this week, our good friend Barbara Weltman of Big Ideas for Small Business will call in from her home and Florida to talk about recent and ongoing changes to the U.S. tax code, especially those changes that will most likely impact you, the eBay seller. For example, the change in who qualifies for a 1099-K starting in 2022. And Brian did attend the Seller Remix event in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago, and he did interview several attendees, but the recorder he took malfunctioned and the audio was blank when he returned. Note to self, test all equipment before sending it out. We'll also talk to sellers Amy and Scott Warren, who will make up for our lack of interviews from the event. They're going to talk about the event itself, and they're going to share some of their experiences in the last year and a half with their business and some of what they're looking forward to. Amy has a dream, apparently, and it's one with which I can identify, and I think you will too. On the eBay news front this week, well, there actually is no huge eBay news. We did announce Q3 earnings. You can look those up on the Seller News Board. And there are two other items of interest that I want to point out. One is an announcement that eBay has just increased temporarily the rates for international standard delivery to Australia and New Zealand. This increase is due to increased overall shipping costs to both of those destinations. And again, these are temporary. And there's also a new post from eBay about navigating the hard-to-find items this holiday selling season. It's definitely worth a read by any seller who is still sourcing right now, or at least open to sourcing products to sell in these rapidly waning shopping weeks before December 25th. Yes, it's hard to believe this year is quickly coming to a close. We'll put both of those links in our transcript for episode 163. Well, enough about me. Let's talk about taxes. Last year, Congress passed new tax legislation, which could have an impact on small businesses like yours. Navigating through the U.S. tax code can be daunting at best, but our next guest can help us learn and adapt and even maybe save a little money when we're tallying up our business tax at tax time. Barbara Weltman is the author of several books on business and taxes, including J.K. Lasser's Small Business Taxes 2020. I assume there's a 2021 in the works.
There's a 2022 in the works.
Okay.
Because we're dealing with 21 taxes.
Exactly.
Sorry to interrupt.
No. Also the author of Smooth Sailing, Top Industry Leaders Share Their Secrets for Turning Pain into Profits, and one of my favorites, Home Business Magazine's Home-Based Business Startup Guide. This is a step-by-step roadmap with checklist to get you started up profitable and successful in your own home-based business. Welcome back, Barbara. Busy year.
Very busy year, and you and I go way back, so I didn't feel I had a problem interrupting you.
No, it's fine.
The 2022 book will be out soon, and that will be applicable to the 2021 returns. And then, of course, we'll have a supplement that'll come out, a free supplement, because Congress is always doing things and we have to update. Whatever's in print still will need updating.
I think the kindest way to put it is it's a work in progress when it comes to Congress, right? So I strongly recommend the Home Business Magazine's Home-Based Business Startup Guide. And this is for a new or even an existing business. You should get a copy of this because there's really great advice in it, and it's so easy to understand. And I think rather than be afraid of what you might end up learning that could result in you paying more, I think you're going to end up saving money. So do invest in that. There's a topic of discussion right now among sellers on eBay about the changes to the eligibility rules for Form 1099-K. And a lot of smaller sellers are going to start receiving these because of those changes. What is a 1099-K and what are the changes to the rules?
A 1099-K is an information return sent out by payers like eBay and your banks. It's sent to merchants to report the gross transactions. And it tells the IRS what these transactions are. Currently, there's a threshold that you have to have a $20,000 and 200 transactions before the processors have to send them out. Starting with 22 transactions, that's going to drop to a flat $600 without regard to the number of transactions. So the 1099-K you're going to receive in January for 2021 transactions is based on the old rules. The very small sellers probably won't get it. With that said, banks and PayPal, they can send it regardless. That's just the minimum that they have to send it out to. And many just send it out automatically to all their customers and just it goes out. When you get it, you do not have to reconcile the amount on your return because the amount of the 1099-K just reflects the gross transactions. It doesn't reflect allowances, returns, what other things that could influence what your gross receipts actually are. But it is a heads up, and the IRS has in the past used it to catch some people not reporting their income.
Right. And I think that's the important point here. There's nothing actionable by a seller when they get this. It's just a reminder that the payment processor now, at least at the threshold, the minimum threshold, has to alert the IRS and send a copy to the individual business that, hey, we're letting the IRS know that we processed this much in payments for you in the previous tax year. Just a heads up. So there's really nothing to worry about.
There's nothing to worry about. There's nothing to do. You nailed it. This is what the IRS is going to know about your transactions, and then you just report what you need to do properly.
Right, and I think the only people who may have a legitimate reason for worrying are those people who tend not to report all of their income.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
What else is on the docket when it comes to the tax code or taxes in general that sellers should have top of mind right now?
In the intro, you pointed out that Congress was very busy passing new laws. The states, some of them have adopted the new law, some have their own law changes. So every year, it's kind of a new slate in terms of checking what the rules are and what you need to do, what you can do, and what breaks are available.
So, yeah, breaks.
Yeah, we love to talk about the tax breaks because you have to report your income. There's no minimum threshold of sales that you have to cross before you have to report it. So if you have $5 in sales for the year, you have to report it. But the good news is that you can take a lot of write-offs that will reduce the amount of income that's subject to tax. And there are a variety of deductions. There are a variety of tax credits. There's an increasing variety of tax credits. That seems to be the way Congress likes to go. And just to make the distinction, a tax deduction you subtract from your income, so it's worth as much as the tax bracket you're in. So if you're in the 22% tax bracket, a $1,000 deduction saves you $220. A tax credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your tax bill. A $1,000 credit saves you $1,000 in taxes. You just have to look at the menu of breaks that are available for you. And I write about hundreds of these things, and there's lots of breaks. And it depends, obviously, on the size of your business, whether you have employees, if you need to upgrade your equipment, for example. There are ways to write it off entirely in the first year rather than spreading out the write-offs using regular depreciation. And a lot of these breaks are available even if you're financing your purchases. So let's say, for example, you need a new computer. And let's assume that you can even get one with supply chain issues. I was told by my IT person I couldn't get one right now. But if you can get one and you buy it, and let's say you finance it, you know, like the store or the vendor or whatever equipment you're buying says, you know, we give you a break, no interest because interest rates are so low, or it doesn't matter from a tax perspective, you're writing off your cost, not regardless of the financing. So that's a really good break. If you drive your vehicle for business purposes, maybe to look at, to meet with new suppliers. I mean, we're doing so much remotely now that driving is not the write-off it used to be. We're meeting with our vendors remotely. We're not going to the post office like we used to. They pick it up. They pick up what
you need. Exactly,
yes. So we're not driving the way we used to, but we still may be doing that. And so there's, you know, that's another kind of write-off to think about. Another write-off, I think we in business need to be thinking about the future. I mean, you and I are, you know, kind of already at the future, if you will, but, you know, we're at retirement age, even though we're still working, but we need to be thinking at any age financially to think about a secure retirement. Social Security isn't going to cut it.
If I'm a small seller on eBay, what are some of the things I should be considering? Should I be socking away beyond Social Security money for retirement? And if so, how?
Well, one of the things to recognize is that when you're reporting your income from your eBay sales, you're going to be paying self-employment tax. Now, if you have a job as well, it kind of coordinates with that. But to the extent that you're paying additional money into Social Security, it will impact your Social Security benefits down the road. It can increase what you'll be able to collect later on. That's sort of an incentive to make sure you're reporting what you need to report. That's a good thing. Another option is, of course, that you can have a retirement savings plan. And you can have one for your eBay business, even if you're an employee working for a company that has a retirement plan. So it's just a question of what you can afford to put away. When it comes to retirement plans, tax advantage retirement plans, it's sort of like a buy now, pay later thing. If you have a tax advantage plan that you're going to be able to deduct your contributions now, you're going to pay tax on your withdrawals later on. If you choose to put your money into, let's say, a Roth IRA, you're not getting a current tax benefit for it, but you're able to build up tax-free income for the future.
So that when you take out withdrawals in your retirement, you're not paying tax on it.
Precisely.
You paid the tax up front.
You paid the tax and you're using after-tax dollars to fund your contributions.
Yeah, and I think for people who are in a higher income tax bracket than what they plan to be at retirement, that could be a better benefit.
Well,
or
sure.
Something to consider, at least.
Well, the theory has always been that when you put money into a tax-deferred account, like a 401k, a SEP, a regular IRA, a traditional IRA, that you're putting money away when you're working in a higher tax bracket than when you take the money out at retirement. But we have to keep in mind, we don't know what tax rates are going to be in the future. You know, Congress is, you know, talking now about raising rates. So what you thought was going to be the rate may not be the rate, and states may be changing their tax rates, and you have to be sensitive to that as well. So you don't really know. You have to kind of make your best guess. I think the bottom line here is saving in any way, shape, or form is going to be helpful.
Yeah, it's always good to be saving. It's important to think about the future. We've talked about these in the past, and I think they always bear repeating. In my brief conversations with sellers, because I don't want to be considered a tax expert, I'm not, I sometimes will ask sellers, so, you know, you have a home business, I assume you're taking like home deductions, and they'll say, what are those? And I'm always a little concerned because you could be missing out by not utilizing everything that's available to you as a home business in the way of deductions.
There's such a thing called a home office deduction. And basically, it's a single write-off for personal expenses of your home allocable to your business space. In the past, it was thought that a home office deduction was an audit red flag. So many people were reluctant to claim a home office deduction. But the SBA reports over 60% of all businesses now in the U.S. are home-based. Forget it. They're not auditing all home businesses. It's just not a reality. So the question is, you have to make sure that you qualify for the deduction, meaning that the home office has to be your principal place of business. It doesn't have to be your only place of business. If you have a job outside, but you run an eBay business from home, that's fine. But the space has to be used regularly and exclusively for business, meaning your kitchen table is never going to be a home office. You need to have separate space. Now, you don't have to have an entire room. You can block off an area in a room, and that can be your home office. You don't even need a physical partition, you know, some designated area that is your home office. And then you have a choice now of taking your actual expenses allocable to that space or using an IRS. Think of it like a standard deduction for home office.
Oh, they have such a thing.
Yes. So it's $5 per square foot up to 300 square feet. The information, for example, for sole proprietors filing a Schedule C, there's a worksheet right in the instructions to the form. Or as most people use software today, it's kind of automatic. You just give the information to your software or your tax pro and they'll compute it. You know, it's kind of like a no-brainer. And the good thing about the standard allowance is that you don't have to have all your receipts, your utilities, and
I see.
Else.
You don't have to, right. And then even if you're not taking the standard, you have to do a lot of maths.
Yes, that's right. Because there's such a thing as a direct and indirect expenses. For example, let's say you have a spare room that you use as your home office. A direct expense would be painting that room. An indirect expense would be painting the outside of the house. So you take a portion of the cost of painting the outside of your house as part of your home office. You know, it gets to be a little overwhelming.
I'll say I've already burnt out a calculator thinking about it. So a lot of our sellers who listen to us, you know, they tend to source in places where it's used inventory to begin with. And then some of it they'll just want to get rid of. How does that work with taxes?
Well, it's a great question to ask now, because at least before the end of the year, you kind of have to decide what you're going to do with your slow-moving, obsolete inventory. And you have a lot of options, actually. So, for example, if you put the stuff up for sale at least 30 days before the end of the year, you can then mark down your inventory. You'll still have the items on hand, but it will impact your tax reporting favorably. You can donate it, and you may be able to take a deduction. It depends. It's not great because, remember, you know, it's limited, usually limited to your cost, not what it's worth. So you may not get a huge benefit in that sense, but you may be doing good. You may be helping some organization that needs the stuff. That's a good move from, you know, just to make you feel good at the end of the year, but also branding. It's not bad to be supporting these other companies.
A lot of these companies will give you a receipt for the value of the stuff that you've donated. Sometimes they leave the amount space blank. They expect you to do it, but you'll have a receipt from that company saying, we took this donation of a value of.
Right. Sometimes they do that. Another thing is just to dump it and write it off. I mean, if stuff is just like in bad condition, maybe it got waterlogged,
oh, yes.
You know, some, you know, things sitting around, or it's just like, forget it, obsolete, nobody's going to want it.
No.
Take a picture of you putting it in the dumpster, you know, document that you've actually disposed of it, so you can write it off your inventory.
Yeah, I have a bunch of that right now. We just had a terrible rainstorm, and my garage has inventory in it, and a leak developed, and about 20 shirts were waterlogged. And the problem is that they don't only just get wet. The rain coming through the wood has an acid in it, and it stains these. There's just no way these are ever going to be. So I just dumped them. I had to. It's just a loss.
Right. Yeah. So there's a write-off in that respect, too. So it's a great thing to be thinking about your inventory now. Inventory is really problematic because right now we're in the midst of supply chain challenges, to say the least. And maybe what you thought was going to be unsaleable, well, maybe now it's going to be desirable because people can't get other things. So you really have to think twice before disposing of items.
Yeah. We always say check eBay, see what the demand is. You may find that there's a demand for something that last year or the year before there was no demand.
That's right. Especially this year, I think That's the best advice you could give.
And of course, you have to really think ahead, don't you? Because the supply chain may be blocked right now, but there are, what is it, over 100 ships around the world waiting to get into ports. So that's supply that's suddenly going to hit the market someday. So you have to think even beyond supply chain issues into what if there is too much inventory in the future?
Yeah, and also I think you have to think about restocking. We don't know what the economy is going to be like going forward. We don't know if consumers will have the wherewithal to continue buying as they have with the COVID easing. So you don't want to overinvest in inventory going forward. It's a delicate balance between having enough on hand for your customer in demand, but not having too much on hand that you put your money in that place.
If there were absolutes in business, everyone would be a business person.
I think so. Yeah. It would be easy.
It would be easy, but it's not. And having someone to help us navigate through some of the difficulties is always helpful. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I just think we have to keep an eye on what's going on in Washington, because most of the provisions, most of the changes that they've been talking about will not impact 2021 returns. Most of the changes will start in 2022, but you never know.
You never know. And in case we need to know, we know where to go. We'll have you back and we can discuss whatever happens in the next year.
Sounds great.
Barbara, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. And happy holidays if we don't talk to you before. And we'll look forward to talking to you again in 2022.
Absolutely.
Barbara Weltman's website is bigideasforsmallbusiness.com. And it itself is a veritable font of small business and tax knowledge. So make sure you check it out. And I can't recommend her. J.K. Lasser's Small Business Taxes 2021 and 22 is coming out. Smooth Falling, top industry leaders share their secrets for turning pain into profits. And my favorite, which is the Home Business Magazine's Home-Based Business Startup Guide. You'll be putting your mind at ease if you invest in any of these for your business. So I didn't get to go, but there was an event in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago. I think most of our audience may have heard of it. It was called the Seller Remix in Las Vegas. There were almost 300 sellers, I hear. And everyone who's attended has relayed back to me that it was a wonderful week. Unfortunately, the recorder that I gave Brian to use malfunctioned, and he didn't know that. So we, poor guy, I think he did a bunch of interviews and none of it was recorded because the recorder acted up. So time for new equipment and always test. But in the meantime, I found two sellers who are willing to give us an overview of what happened at the event. And also, I want to talk about their business, especially in light of the last year and a half circumstances that we're all too familiar with. Please join me in welcoming Scott and Amy Warren.
Hello.
Amy, what is the name of your eBay business?
Our eBay business is called the Apple Barrel.
And where are you based?
We're based in Tucson, Arizona, the sunny Southwest.
You sound a little different in audio from Amy. You are in separate locations.
Yeah, I'm sitting in my truck in the parking lot of a Goodwill.
What?
I was out working when the time arrived for this interview, and I thought, I'll just pull over in the Goodwill parking lot.
You stinker, you're probably going to go inside when we're done too, aren't you?
I might, but there's a yard sale nearby that intrigues me even more.
Meanwhile, I'm working my 8-to-5 office job that gives us health insurance and college tuition discount for our young men at home. And that's kind of like you're cheating on me. I don't know how I feel about this.
Oh dear, I think we stumbled into a potential family situation here.
Enhance our relationship.
Enhance it, yeah.
So you are, when we're finished here, you are, Scott, going to go into the Goodwill.
I probably.
Of course you are.
He better.
So the two of you went to Las Vegas, which is not that far from Tucson. I assume you drove.
Yep, an easy 7-hour drive.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It's like going from, it's about 7 hours from San Jose as well. How did the event go?
I thought it was great. You know, I really get a lot out of hearing what other people do and how they do it. So whether it's, you know, the process they go through to actually list on eBay, do they start on their phone? Do they do their whole thing from a laptop? From that to how people use List Perfectly, how they use the research tools in Terapeak and WorthPoint. I get a lot out of hearing what people do and how they do it. And even if it's not something we're doing or using right now, I always file it away in the back of my mind for down the road. working in higher education, it's been all Zoom for the last nearly 2 years now. And so it was really nice to be with people. It's a totally different vibe in person.
Oh, yeah.
Than the Zoom vibe.
You kind of forget what it's like to be face to face with a bunch of people that you all share a common interest.
And even though I'm not the most social butterfly, like in the large crowd, I'm very much a wallflower. But I love observing people and watching people and just absorbing conversation and that kind of thing.
Scott, what was your take?
I ditto what she says. I think the people element is huge. When eBay did the Zoom forum of the eBay Open 2020, you know, we watched as we could, but just totally different. There's a lacking in a Zoom forum rather than a people forum. And eBay, well, in the reseller community, you know, is full of so many interesting people. And it's fun to talk with people, find out what they do, how they do it. Some folks are much more into social media than we are. And everybody is making a good killing at it we don't all have to be the same. But we can glean so much from each other that way.
How has business been in the last year and a half during these, unmentionable time. So
right. Actually, for us, it has been record-breaking. April of 2020 was a record-breaking month for us, and then May of 2020 nearly doubled April of 2020. Would you like me to tell you my take on how and why that happened?
Yes, I would.
I don't know if you know, but we sell a lot of cactus and plants and plant seeds because Scott is a nurseryman by trade. When I got sent from home from work in March of 2020, in my downtime, because I was home, I could do personal work. I had the authorization from work. So while I was waiting for real work to do, I could do my own eBay work. And I realized that some of our cactus listings had fallen by the wayside. They had run out or whatever. And that's because I was going to grad school. And so our business had kind of taken a backseat. That could be a separate story if you want to talk about that. So I realized I had a bunch of cactus listings that had ended. And so I put them out again. And oh my gosh, it just picked up and picked up and picked up. And then so we added more varieties and added some live plants, added a couple more plant seed varieties. And so it was the perfect storm of me being able to give my business some extra love, plus people having tax return money, plus people having stimulus money, plus everyone getting sent home for 2 weeks and picking up their project lists. So it was kind of the perfect storm of circumstances there. And like we hurt ourselves working. I had to go to the chiropractor because we were shipping so much that I physically hurt myself, my back bending and shipping. But it was great.
Scott, what has 2021 been like? Has it mapped to 2020 for your business, or has it been a different situation?
2021 has been good, but not record-breaking. We need it to be better because now I am full-time at what we do. We eventually want both of us to be full-time in our little business. And so we need more revenue to support two incomes. But having said that, we are incrementally increasing, but we haven't broke the records like we did in that anomaly of 2020 COVID season.
But we also changed up our inventory. Before we would harvest, so we'd sell cactus pads, right? So prickly pear is our big one, and it's like got the palm size pads, which you just cut off, let them dry, mail them to your person. They let them dry a little longer, stick them in the ground, and they grow and you have a new plant. We were harvesting from our backyard crop as we sold. So we had infinite quantities, basically. I just put, you know, we had 200 available or whatever.
It's the ideal inventory.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it is. But what we've done differently in 2020 is like we release 50 or 100 pads at a time to regulate it a little bit. We had to because it's just the two of us in the after hours of work. And some of that decrease is self-imposed for a reason.
Scott, do you notice a increase in competition for the same products like prickly pear that you were selling?
Not really. There doesn't seem to be much competition. In fact, when we tell people we sell cactus, everybody is surprised that we would sell such an odd thing and want all the questions about how do you do it. So we really don't have a lot of competition that I'm aware of. And I know at one point, last year, we were the highest selling in the cactus succulent category.
Well, that's good. I hope you can maintain that position. I hope that after this interview, you suddenly don't get a lot of competition.
It's okay. There's enough out there. And that's just one branch of what we do. You know, we're also typical thrifters and we sell a lot of recyclables. And I like the five finger approach. You know, we have a niche. We do reselling. We do consignment. I do teaching. We try to have multiple arms and branches so that if one takes a dip, you still have the others to help support.
It's like investments. You don't want to put all of your eggs in one basket. Yeah.
Diversified our inventory a fair amount too. When I started doing this full time, I discovered that it was easy to sell appliance parts, replacement appliance parts. And so there are free dishwashers available on Craigslist and Marketplace all the time that I can go pick up, and I can harvest parts off of them and make a significant amount off of something I got for free.
We talked about this a couple of episodes ago with used or broken printers. And I just assumed you donate the printer to a recycle center, but someone then piped up and said, oh no, take it apart. You can sell the parts.
Yes. The combination of all the parts is more valuable than if you sold the item directly.
Well, the shipping alone would set you back, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Amy, what's the future of your business for the next year? I know that as we move back to any sort of, I don't want to ever use the word normal. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. But to whatever is 2022 turns out to be, are you guys planning for it? Are you continuing to diverse your inventory?
I would say we are opportunists more than anything. So we are always looking for opportunities and such. I would say the two big things on the horizon for us, maybe three. So we have a part-time lister who works for us about 5 to 10 hours a week. She takes pictures and drafts listings for me. So beefing up her hours and or hiring another person to do cross-listing for me. And then I kind of have two other dreams. One would be some commercial space because we are totally maxed out at home. But this isn't next year, but like I have a vision for like a local co-op. Like a WeWork meets eBay, where other local sellers can come together and we can work together, but doing our own things during the day, like where we share mannequins and we share light boxes. And I can totally see the space, you know, stocked with tape measures and black light and long tables with lots of electrical outlets to plug in and work. And you get what I'm saying?
Oh, of course.
WeWork,
yeah.
But not office cubicle for resellers. Have a big shipping area with collective packing peanuts and air pillows and more bulk boxes from both the post office and from eBay, you know, like sharing our resources kind of thing. So I think about that all the time, but that's going to be a little bit down the road. But that's like my daydream of where I would love to take our business.
Scott, do you share Amy's dream of what sounds to me like an eBay hippie co-op for selling?
I do. I look at it. I share it. And she looks at it as a vision. And I look at it from a more practical standpoint of how are we going to do that? And how's it going to make us money without excessive costs? So we're a pretty good team in that way.
And I look at it more, I love helping people get started on eBay. I was an education specialist trained by eBay. I love teaching people. I especially love that brand new seller, just learning, just getting started. I love helping and teaching and talking eBay. So that, I guess I kind of have some selfish motivations for my dream.
I don't think it's selfish. I think it's a need that's worth fulfilling.
Thank you. We'll let you know if we do.
Well, if you do, I want to follow it and hopefully you'll come on the podcast and talk about it.
I would love to. I'll add that to my goal sheet.
Look up and see if the trademark We Sell. Grab it now so that you can have the URL or something similar.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, I knew I didn't want to use our own business name. And again, that dream is also somewhat selfishly envisioned because it would give us a lot more space to work out of.
Oh,
and, you know,
yeah.
In the back will be storage and maybe I could even store other people's things so their living room doesn't have to look like ours. They could store it there, but still come in and do their own shipping and that kind of thing. So.
I see the Apple Barrel turning into a national fulfillment center.
I don't know about that.
To rival the biggest of the biggest.
Like, I don't want to do your fulfillment for you. I just want to provide a place where you can come do it.
Well, of course, yeah. You don't want to do all the work.
Great.
Well, guys, it's been great talking to you, and I appreciate both of you taking time out of, well, obviously Amy's taking time out of her work, but it looks like Scott's taking time out of his sourcing. And there's an estate sale calling your name, so I won't keep you any longer.
Well, thank you, Griff, for having us. This has been a great way to spend my lunch hour.
Grab something to eat. Scott, don't overdo it at Goodwill. And we'll talk to both of you again in the future about this project. I'd love to hear how it plays out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Scott and Amy Warren sell on eBay under the store name The Apple Barrel. We'll put a link to their eBay store in the transcript for episode 163. It's always a delight to talk to eBay sellers. Maybe you'd like to be on our podcast. If you do, then let us know. You can call us at 888-723-4630, or you can send an email to podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. There's no questions this week. You Got Questions is on a short hiatus for this week, and hopefully it'll be back next week. But that doesn't mean we're not taking questions, so you can still ask us. You can send us your questions or your comments. Tell us how your selling season is going. Tell us, are you perplexed by anything? Call us at 888-723-4630, or again, our email address, podcast@ebay.com. We'd like to thank again our guests this week, from Big Ideas for Small Business, tax expert Barbara Welfman, and eBay sellers Amy and Scott Warren from the Apple Barrel on eBay. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed in part by Libsyn and Podcast 411.